Our second reading is taken from Mark chapter 2, verses 18 to 28. Now, we talk about Jesus as being perfect and without sin, but lest you think that means he was a goody two-shoes who everybody liked, that is not the case. Only two chapters in, and Jesus is getting in trouble with everybody. So listen for the word of the Lord in your life today. Now, John's disciples and the Pharisees were fasting, and people came and said to Jesus, "Why do John's disciples and the disciples of the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast?" Jesus said to them, "The wedding guests cannot fast while the bridegroom is with them, can they? As long as they have the bridegroom with them, they cannot fast. The days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them, and then they will fast on that day. No one sews a piece of unshrunk cloth on an old cloak, otherwise the patch pulls away from it, the new from the old, and a worse tear is made. And no one puts new wine into old wineskins, otherwise the wine will burst the skins, and the wine is lost, and so are the skins. But one puts new wine into fresh wineskins." One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and as they made their way, his disciples began to pluck heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" And he said to them, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need of food? He entered the house of God when Abiathar was high priest and ate the bread of the presence, which it is not lawful for any but the priests to eat, and he gave some to his companions. Then he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for humankind, and not humankind for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath.'" This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I often start these sermons with a question, and I'm going to ask you one today, but you have to be honest if you answer. Raise your hand if you would like for someone to describe you as a religious person. Not very many, right? Not very many. Because doesn't that have kind of a negative effect today? It almost sounds like an insult, and usually people start it with a but. You know, "Oh, Alton's nice, but he's pretty religious," right? It sounds negative, and people equate it with being judgmental. Sorry, Alton. My eyes fell on you first. People equate it with being judgmental, close-minded, or naive, or just plain no fun to be described as religious. And back in New Testament days, it was just the opposite. The religious people were the ones who had all the respect of the community. Everybody looked to them as to how to live and how to make decisions. And they took that power very seriously, too seriously. The main religious people that you hear about in Jesus' day in the Bible were called Pharisees. And they were a sect or like a denomination of Judaism whose name literally means "the ones who are separate." The ones who are separate. They were different. They fancied themselves different and better than all those impure people out there because they strove to follow the law, to the letter of the law. Now, Jesus has a bone to pick with those religious people of his time, and I think that has an important lesson for all of us here today. Over the next couple of months up through Lent, we're learning more about who Jesus was, what he is really about, through the Gospel of Mark. And this week we come to chapter 2, and this small chapter, only up through chapter 3, just one chapter, has five different controversies between Jesus and religious people. I like to think of them as tussles, headbutts, controversies, but there's five in one chapter. So Jesus is no people pleaser, that is for sure. And as Jesus is coming to this point that we read today, he's already in the chapter 2, healed a man who was paralyzed. Friends brought a paralyzed man to him, and he was teaching this large crowd, and he stopped what he was doing and healed the man and forgave him. So a true, like, body and spirit healing. And he got in trouble for doing that. And then, also before the reading you heard me read today, Jesus also had dinner with one of his new disciples who had a really bad reputation. And he got in trouble for that. So what's been happening is these religious people are ignoring these great miracles and these great lessons right before their eyes. And instead, they're kind of focusing on how Jesus is stealing their show. Because everybody used to listen to them. But this new guy in town has everyone's attention. And so the Pharisees were making it their business to try to prove that Jesus was a fraud, because he broke the rules and he hung out with all these seedy people, with all the wrong people. And where we picked up today, the animosity has been really building. The religious people don't seem to be able to stem the tide of this growing popularity. Because at the very least, people are curious about him, and a lot of people are willing to follow him anywhere, to leave everything. And following Jesus meant not always just following all the rules of the old law. So that made these religious leaders furious, because that was their thing. And he's saying now their thing doesn't matter? So they kept trying to make him look foolish. And what we read today was just another example of them trying to go, see, this guy is a fraud. Now, when I picture the Pharisees, their relationship to Jesus, I think of something we might all be familiar with, which is a police car, lights turned off, undercover in a parking lot, just waiting for you to drive by like 5 miles over the speed limit. Just waiting to catch you, right? That's where they're at with him at this point. And with Jesus, they do catch him. They catch him eating when others are fasting, and they catch him gathering food on the Sabbath. These things were prohibited by the law. Did Jesus not realize this? See, he's a fake. Did he not realize all these rules? There were 613 rules to be followed in the law. And did he not get that? Surely a real Messiah and teacher would remember those things. And yes, Jesus did know the law. He did study it, but he was choosing to prioritize something else. So Jesus calls their bluff. When they try to make him look bad, he calls their bluff. He says, fasting was intended to be for the purpose of connecting with God, of preparing for God's presence. But God's already there with them. Jesus is Emmanuel, God with us. He's there with them. He compared himself to a groom at a wedding. If you think of weddings in modern day, when the couple of honor is there at the wedding, you don't keep preparing to celebrate. You celebrate, right? Even if everything isn't ready, you just celebrate with them. And then when it comes to the Sabbath, to that controversy, Jesus reminds them that the Sabbath was meant to be a gift for us, not a bunch of hoops to jump through, not a burden. None of these religious practices or rituals, back then or today, were ever meant for us to just show off how religious we are. They were meant to make us more free, more joyful, more connected to God. See, religious people back then, and I think probably a lot of us today too, we don't get this, that religion is not the same thing as a relationship with God. And you've probably heard that before, but I wonder how many of you really, really believe that and live like that was true. Religion is not the same thing as a relationship with God. I think of some of these couples in our church who've been married for decades. And if I was to ask them, well, why do you love this other person? How'd you stick with them for 40 or 50 years? My guess is that they wouldn't just rattle off like a honey-do list of tasks that the other one performs. They wouldn't say, well, you know, 50 years because he always does the dishes, and even raising children. It's not about things that you do. You love the other person because of deeper things, because you know them and they know you. Warts and all, you really know each other. It's a living relationship, not a to-do list, not a machine. And it's the same thing with God. We do not need to think that the only thing that gets God's attention and love is all the stuff we do, all these religious practices. Even coming to church every single week, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're letting God know you and love you, when that's really all that God wants from any of us, from all of us. Even those of us who don't consider ourselves very churchy, who were definitely not raising our hands and like to be called religious, even us, God will say, I want to know you. And I think that sounds really refreshing, but it didn't to everybody. See, by the end of Mark chapter 3, verse 6, just that far into Mark, these religious people are already plotting to kill him because they don't think it sounds refreshing. There was a battle going on between mercy, grace, and religion. And with Jesus, religion seemed to be losing. You heard it read by Rob here this morning that in the much older book of the Psalms, the people had studied and heard who God was. It said, the Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love. They knew, at least in their minds, who this God was, but how many of us have over time gotten the wrong impression of God? Maybe because some of us, his followers, fixate on the wrong things. We worry about the rules and doing things properly and keeping up tradition. And meanwhile, what's lost is a beautiful relationship that's trying to heal our deepest pain and invite us to deeper joy. Friends, I'm afraid a lot of our most well-meaning and friendliest churches are sending the wrong message to the world. Maybe we realize it and maybe we don't, but I think it is happening that somewhere along the way, a lot of us get entrenched in this faith thing and we start to lose the wonder and the journey of it all, and we focus on all these little piddly details. They're easier to control, right? We turn into Pharisees, secretly judging people walking in late as opposed to celebrating that they're here with us at all. Or we try to get them to sign up for tasks to do at church as opposed to starting a real conversation about real life or faith issues. There's a writer named David Zoll who wrote a recent book that's called, this is a long title, Seculosity: How Career, Parenting, Technology, Food, Politics, and Romance Became Our New Religion and What to Do About It. I'm still in the middle of reading this book, but I love it. It's a long title, but it sums up something important that this writer noticed, and I think it's great for us to notice it too. What he says is that you often hear complaints in churches like ours, like churches out there, saying, why are we only half full on Sundays? Why don't people care about faith anymore? But that those complaints are not right. They're not correct. People are still religiously devoted and faithful, but to other things outside of church walls. They're devoting a near religious level of zeal and time and energy to other endeavors. Outside of here, where they find community and meaning, and especially, he says, a sense of being enough in this world. And they're finding that elsewhere. Things like CrossFit and the PTA and their dating lives are getting that same attention. And there's a guy who reviewed this book who said it really well. He said, whereas our predecessors could say, I'm baptized, we say, I'm so busy, and hope that that state of busyness justifies our lives. Whereas ancient Christians apprenticed themselves to the saints, we count our exercise steps and Facebook likes to validate ourselves. We might not believe any longer in a God who visits the sins of the parents upon their children, but we seem to believe that the achievements of our children will be reckoned as our own. So that's sort of where that book is going, just noticing how that same faith, all that energy that goes into faith, it's still there, it's just being redirected. And what does that mean? St. Augustine once said to God, our hearts are restless until they find rest in you. And this book says that is true, but that churches have become places where fewer people are finding that rest in God. So how can we turn that around? What can we do about this? And the author thinks that trying to find the answer in anything that we do is exactly the problem. Because we have to remember, even if we've been part of faith for a long time, we have to remember this faith is not about anything that we do. It's everything about what God has done, how God has reached out to us in the most ultimate and personal of ways and extended us this relationship of love and acceptance, even when we don't want it, even when we don't deserve it. He's asking us to be a part of it. So if we want our churches to become places of grace, first, each one of us has to really believe in our hearts that that's what this is all about. That relationship with God comes before any religion. So let's make sure we don't physically show up in places like this and miss that whole point. Because the point is grace. Our God is a God of grace, and God is doing something new, and we don't want to miss it because we're invited to be a part of it. What Jesus was trying to do in his ministry, it couldn't just be smushed into the old ways of doing faith and life. It was like fitting a square peg into a round hole. Jesus said it was like sewing a brand new, tight piece of fabric onto old, worn fabric. It would rip. Or, for wine fans out there, it was like trying to fit new wine into old, stretched wineskins. They would burst. So compare it even to bottles. Instead of wine bottles like what we use, people in his day would hold wine in a big, thick animal skin and it would absorb it all. And it would have to stretch to do that. But when you stretch enough times, sometimes you have no more stretch left. You need something new. A modern-day example I would give that maybe has happened to some of you or will happen this spring. Just imagine, no one here, but just imagine that some of you were middle-aged and you go up into your attic for spring cleaning and you find in a box an old Letterman jacket. Do they still make those? Like the Letterman jackets for the football captain or something? And you used to be football captain, you find this Letterman jacket and you go, oh, wow, my glory days when I was so popular and my whole life was ahead of me, everyone loved me. And you try it on and it doesn't fit. Maybe because you've gained weight, or the weight has moved around, or whatever it is, it just doesn't fit. And you're not the same person as that 18-year-old that once wore that. Do you throw it out? Probably not. It means something. It's really special. But it doesn't quite fit anymore either. And I think in order to follow Jesus, all of us have to constantly keep testing the fit. We have to think bigger. What used to work and what used to fit for us may not fit into this new grace-filled life, and it's new every day. Jesus' first ever sermon recorded in Mark starts with the words, "The time has come." So I'd ask you to think about it. Has the time come for you to make some kind of a change? Are you truly growing in your faith? Or are you the same Christian you were when you first became a Christian 10, 20, 30 years ago, even a year ago? Are you still the same? Even if you're set in your ways, the time has come. Even you can grow and change with Jesus' help. Even I can. If your life doesn't reflect that wide open, deeply connected relationship with God, the time has come. The time has come to stop grumbling that our poor old bottles are bursting, our poor old jackets don't fit, and get out of our comfort zone, and instead just celebrate with Jesus and join the party. Amen.